Hey guys, my name is Sabir Bharti. A very warm welcome to another episode of the Sabir Bharti Show, the place where I interview interesting people with interesting perspectives. My guest today is Karen Rayburn. That's spelled Karen Rayburn on Twitter at Karen L. Rayburn. Karen is the founder and managing director of the creative agency, The Profitable Firm, better known as PF. They specialize in helping accountants attract the clients they want using their extremely unique marketing philosophy. You can find out more about PF on Twitter at @wear_PF and their website, which is wearepf.com. Now, before we begin, just to give you a bit of background. I actually connected with Karen and her wonderful team just a few weeks ago, and I was so taken aback by the immense professionalism and the wholesome values, which are very central to their work ethic and culture. And I was so impressed that I sent an invite out to be on the show and was super, super happy that Karen agreed to be on the show today. So let's kick things off and welcome our special guest today. Good evening, Karen Rayburn. Hello.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for all the questions we're going to dig into.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Honestly, I cannot put into words how thrilled I am that you said yes to this. And I've been looking forward to it all week. So really looking forward to the conversation. So of course, we're going to delve into so much today, including, of course, the fabulous work that you're doing with PF. But I wanted to start things off slightly differently and ask you this question, if you don't mind. So I want to ask you about a place in Scotland called the Isle of Mull. And it's an island which lies, I believe, off of the west coast of
Yes,
Scotland.
yes, it
And
does.
you describe it as being your favorite place in the world.
It
So, what I wanted to ask you was, what makes this place so intriguing for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I originally would have said Scotland is my favorite place in the world, which it still is. But because this island is off the coast, I'm like, there's places that are my favorite on the mainland. And then there's my favorite place in the world. So it's a very small island. I've been visiting it. Originally, it was yearly. Now it's turned into, I think I've been there 6 times this year, over the last 18 years. So I moved to Scotland from America about 20 years ago. And it's one of those where I believe that there are places and as well as people that you can have a connection to. So I remember talking to a friend one time where he said, "Oh, I feel like me and Florence have this connection, but I haven't been able to fully explore it." And that was the first I kind of considered how places can have a connection as well as people. You know, you meet someone, you're like, "Oh, always really hit it off. We connected." You know, like you're saying, you and I chat, and you're like, "Oh, this is exciting. It's going to be great." I feel like I had that one the very first time I went to the Isle of Mull because it's far enough away from the mainland to be away, and you feel like you're in another world and it's very remote. There's about 3,000, if I'm correct, there's about 3,000 people on the island. There's a little tiny island it's connected to. And I had this, like, it's far enough away, but close enough. You know, it takes me about 2.5 hours to get to the ferry, 45 minutes on a ferry, and you're just in a whole nother world. And one of the pillars that we have at PF at my company is rest. And to be in a place that is restful for your mind, for your spirit, for your senses, for your heart. And for whatever reason, there was a grain of that in the early days when I first started going to Mull. And the more often I went there, the stronger that connection was to that place. And there's an element to which there's only so much I can describe about it. I'm imagining you and those listening would have places that and people that you it's hard to you try to, but there are other people who visit it and go, "Yeah, it's beautiful, it's amazing. Don't really want to live there, but that's cool. Glad you enjoy it." And for me, it's a connection that only gets stronger. And I was driving on the island one of the last times I was there, and there was a guy who needed a lift. Again, not normally the thing I would do on the mainland, especially in Glasgow or something, but you're on this remote island, everybody knows everybody. And I say, "Can I give you a lift?" And I drop him off at a farm about 45 minutes away. And he asked me the same question, And we were talking about how this place is literally has magic. There's magic element in it for me. And it has to do with the changeability and the light and the beauty and the quiet and the fact that if you anywhere you drive, the cows and the sheep are going to slow you down. Everything slows you down. No matter how hard you try to go fast on Mull, you cannot. The island will stop you. So I feel like Mull allows, not only allows me, but also sometimes requires me to slow down in spite of myself. And I need that in my life.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And it's really interesting. And I actually had a similar experience when I traveled to Malta about 2, 3 years ago. Initially went on holiday with a friend and came back with a very similar feeling. There was something very unique and special about the
Yes.
place.
Yeah.
Similar to what you described about the Isle of Mull, it had a very peaceful element to the place. And yeah, so I actually went back to live there for a while and
Right.
ended up coming back.
Yeah.
But it holds a very special place in my heart. So I totally get where you're coming from. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, and there, I do also want to say sometimes I feel a little nervous sharing it because I'm like, listen, I love that if everybody loves it, but everybody is not able to love it because then it won't be what it is.
Sure.
But I do feel like Mull is literally protected by the water because, unlike, for example, the Isle of Skye, which has a bridge that you can go over anytime, you have to have a ferry. There are only three different ferries, and if you don't get a ferry, you don't go. So there is an element to which Mull protects itself, and I believe I don't want to speak for the island because I don't live there yet, but there is this mentality that like Mull loves that it is shared with people and also maybe not too many people. So there's that fine line.
Sure. No, thank you again for sharing that.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to hear that story. Now I want to switch gears slightly now and talk a bit about PF and your marketing philosophy,
Yeah.
which I find really interesting when I came across it for the first time. Now, in some parts of the marketing world, I guess there is this notion that you have to try and get everyone who approaches your business, so try and get as many of the clients that approach you. Now, while that may work for some, your approach is very unique and different because your philosophy is it's important to attract clients that you want to work with. And this is what you do with your clients. You work with accountants. And another part that I found really interesting, because we were speaking off air through email a few days ago, and you said that you hold the values of freedom and honesty very dear to your heart. And that got me thinking, and I was really excited to ask you this question actually. How much do you feel your values of freedom and honesty are actually intertwined with your philosophy? Because in a way, you're giving your clients the freedom to choose clients they want, and you're also being honest with them about what you think is the right way forward. So I'd be
Yeah.
interested to know if that carries, if your values carry to your philosophy in your workplace.
Yeah, it's a great question because if I step back for a second to the official values of PF, which are creativity, integrity, generosity, and rest, those are pillars, the character pillars of the company. We also have six values that are behavior-led values. Those two that you mentioned are my personal life values. And every member of the team identifies their two personal life values as well as their personal pillars. And we got that from an exercise through Brené Brown's Dare to Lead. And there's a whole exercise you can do. And we've created a whole task and exercise within PF that every new team member, here's how to do it, here's how to get down to it. And the whole process of figuring out what those two things are is a deep exercise. I mean, I probably spent 2 weeks deciding between freedom and independence, which one truly reflected me and my decisions. And a big part of personal life values is saying, when I go to make a big decision in my life, what values guide me? And when I thought about what caused me to end up moving to Scotland from America or, you know, wanting to eventually move to Mull, like there are things about freedom and choices that have to do with that. I've never actually stopped to think about my personal freedom and honesty flowing through. But as soon as you shared that, 100%, and it makes sense, because going back to those four core pillars, creativity, integrity, generosity, rest, I initially created those when it was just me and a few freelancers, you know, 10 years ago. We now have a team of 18, and we've got content writers and graphic designers and web team and client marketing managers. And we have checked in on those pillars many times over the years, and they still hold true. But it does make sense that the personal values of the business owner would flow through as well. And I do believe that not only are those important to me, but the type of people we work with are people who value freedom. Many of them started their accountancy firm because they wanted to be free from a firm they were working in that didn't do things the way they felt was the healthiest or best way to do them, or they wanted to be free to do things on their own time. And then when it comes to honesty, you know, what we encourage accountants to do is be honest with yourself about who you do actually want to work with, because I believe everybody, or almost everybody, starts a business with, I have to take on everyone. I don't necessarily think that's the healthiest or the best choice, but it is often what we do out of desperation or fear or a lack of knowledge about who your audience is. So a lot of what we do at PF is helping people to be honest about who they actually want to work with, and then have the sense of self-worth to say, I don't have to take that client who is, or that potential client who is sending me harsh messages, questioning everything that I send them, every bill, every quote, every proposal, who is making my and my team's life difficult. I don't have to, because life is too short and I am worth working with people I love. And then recognizing that working with people you love doesn't necessarily mean that a lovely person will be a client of yours. They may be lovely and kind and you enjoy their company, but this is not the right place for them to be best served or for you to serve them. Same with the team. When we hire people, we want them to be with PF for the long term. But there are times when things change and you go, is this the best? It has to be the best place for clients and for the team for the whole time that they're there. And we have to be honest with ourselves and each other about, is it working now? Is it continuing to work? And then clients and teams stay there because they're in the best place that they could be.
Yeah. No, that's fascinating. Your approach is really interesting. And, you know, I'm always intrigued whenever I hear stories of founders in organizations who like to do things differently, and as a result, are doing things well. I get a real kick out of hearing stories like that. It's really exciting. So honestly, congratulations on the initiative, the way you think about marketing. It's clearly working. So thank you for sharing those insights. Now, I hope you don't mind. What I want to do through the rest of our conversation is to switch gears every now and then. So to give the audience a better flavor of PF and also a bit about you as the founder. Now, a few moments ago, you mentioned your switch from America to Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the decision that you made of not returning back to America once you went to Scotland was quite a profound moment in your life. And it resulted in a lot of positive outcomes for you. Mm-hmm. So could we perhaps touch on that a little bit? Just share with us what that experience was like and how you felt when you decided, okay, I'm in Scotland, I love Scotland, I'm not moving back to the States.
Yeah, and thank you for the question. I was telling you before this that the mere question of what moment in your life do you consider to be profound was a profound question. And I went, oh my word, I feel like I could go to the Isle of Mull and mull this over for a month. Like, what does profound even mean? And a lot of my processing was to, at least for me, mean that profound has to do with something that moves you, something that changes things for the long term. And yet it somehow also connects with things that were moving already. So I was talking to somebody today about light bulb moments and how even if you have one, it is usually the summary of all these little thoughts and little things. And conversations and wonderings and ideas. And then if you have a, oh my word, this is the thing moment, it almost never is because it came out of nowhere. It came out of all the things, but they came together in a moment or a series of moments. So for me, when I first moved to Scotland, I was just going to be here for 3 years. That was the plan. Come, be here for 3 years, go back. Fully planned, got it all figured out. And then after 3 years, I was like, not quite ready to go back. I'll just hang about a little longer. I went from a work permit to a residency so that I was able to, you know, work anywhere and not be tied to a particular job. I worked in an accountancy firm. And then I got to the end of the residency and the opportunity came up to apply for citizenship. And I was like, huh, do I want to do that? That was the first question. And I was leaning towards it. And honestly, I kid you not, one of my biggest reasons was, gosh, that'll make customs a lot easier if I have two passports. I can just come into the UK with my UK passport, come into the US with my US passport. Like, that was a big thing. And also being able to work anywhere. And then all the, you know, connecting to being a full citizen here as opposed to just a resident. But then as I thought about it, I was like, one of the reasons this is appealing is I'm starting to feel like Scotland may be my place. Now, I don't, but I did consider it, but I don't believe anyone is ever born in the wrong place. I did wonder that. But then I thought, no, I don't believe in that. I believe you're born where you're meant to be born. And I also believe that you have choices. And as I lived here, I just thought, I feel like I would like to make the choice for this to be my home. And we're back to our conversation about Mull. All the feelings I have about that as a place were match the sort of feelings I have when I first came to Scotland. I had a connection with the country, literally the country, and had a hard time explaining to people what it was that made me say, I don't know if I'm too bothered if I don't move back to America at that time. And then moving through a series of tiny, tiny, tiny things, a lot of which were resistance feelings to move back to America, despite, you know, love my family, my dad, who was alive at the time, he's passed away now, but I remember having conversations with him and really wrestling it through. And I appreciated so much that he said, well, if you're asking me for my preference, I'd say, come back, please, in a heartbeat. I'd love to have you live here. But I want what's best for you. I want you to choose what you want. What do you want? And I was like, Dad, I don't know. I don't know what I want. And he said, well, you got to figure it out. You got to figure out however long it takes. You got to figure out what you want. And by the time I figured out that Scotland was what I wanted, then citizenship became not only an easy decision, but solidified things like previous to that, people would say, where are you from? Which is still the hardest question ever, by the way. And I don't know about you, but I don't love it as a question. I try desperately to be gracious with it because it's often the first thing that people are asking me. But I think, what does that even mean? Like, I was born in America. Scotland's my home. I know I have an American accent. So everybody presumes that I am American or visiting. And I'm like, I've been here 20 plus years now. This is my home. I know, in one sense, less about American culture than about British culture in some ways. And then there's other things I keep learning about. So I think a lot of it, when I finally decided on citizenship, my profound moment was when I was sharing it with my family. And I remember my mom's expressing to me, this is a little hard for me to celebrate, because I'm realizing this is you letting go of moving back to America. And same as my dad, she's like, I want you to be happy. I want you to do what you want to do, be where you want to be. I'm not, and she wasn't and never has pressured me. None of my family have ever been like, other than jokingly, please come back tomorrow. But, you know, they've always wanted me to do what I love. And then they come get to come and visit me. But that was a profound moment because it struck me. I hadn't really realized that my process of working this through in my life and heart, they had to make their process through it as well. And there was a sadness for them to go, oh, this is for real now. This isn't temporary. This isn't coming back one day. We're calling it. And on equally on my side was, oh, I am called, like, this is what I'm doing. This is my home now. This is where I live. And then I started a business, bought a house, you know, settled into all these other things. But that was profound for the, I hadn't even realized what it symbolically was saying to me to choose that and say, and I'm a dual citizen. I'm equally a citizen of America and of Britain and a resident in Scotland. And that has a profound impact on me as a person and how I do life and business and all of these things.
Sure. Well, thank you for sharing that. And as you were speaking, something just came to my mind, and it wasn't one of the kind of questions that I'd planned, but I just thought of it a few seconds ago. If you could choose one thing that you really miss about being back home in America, is there one thing that sometimes you
Good
ponder on?
Mexican food.
You miss
Like
Mexican food.
good, real, authentic. So I'm originally from Arizona, and
Right,
that is
okay.
borders California and Mexico.
Okay.
And no matter how hard you try in
Yeah.
Britain, the ingredients are not the same. So if I go to one of countless great Mexican restaurants in Arizona with my family, I mean, just the highest quality, and I'm talking full fat, by the way, and cheese and all of those good things.
Yeah.
Just like such good quality of Mexican food, very hard to find here. I would say I don't believe I've ever yet, I'm open to suggestions, but I haven't yet found a restaurant that in Britain that I feel like is
Matches
equal
what's in
to
America.
that level.
Okay.
And there's reasons for that. You know, it makes sense. Like we each have to lean into what we're best at. You know, there's things
Sure.
Scotland does that Arizona doesn't have, like rain. You know, Arizona doesn't do that very well. And yeah, so little things like that. And I do miss my family. You know, I often said if I could have my mom and my sisters and my nieces and nephews here in Scotland, then I would have all the things. But we don't get all the things in this life. You know, we get some of them and we get a lot of them. And gosh, I have daily so much to be grateful for. But yeah, you don't always get all the things, and that's okay.
Sure. Well, I must admit, you just got my taste buds going. So I haven't had dinner yet, and talking about Mexican
Neither have
food,
I.
you just made my mind wonder about food.
Enchiladas.
Oh, I love a good enchilada. Absolutely. No, thank you again for sharing that. So let's switch gears again, if you don't mind, and come back to PF. Now, I love the fact that you did touch on the four pillars, which are very central to PF's values, and it intertwined as well with the culture. And I certainly felt that when I connected with your team a few weeks ago, it was very obvious. And I think that was the reason why I enjoyed the interaction so much. So you've instilled that in them, which is absolutely brilliant. So I want to talk about these four pillars in a bit more detail. So creativity, as you mentioned, integrity, generosity, and rest. Now, with the first one, creativity, I was wondering, being a creative agency, did you find that pillar to be fairly easy to adopt as a team, as you are a team of creatives, or was it something that you still had to work on?
I would say I questioned it initially when I came up with the four pillars, which since we've discussed them as a team and agreed them, and yes, they're still our pillars and we lean into them. And I remember thinking, is this obvious? Is this like we're a creative agency, we have creativity, you know, do I even need to say it? And the reason I chose and we have chose to keep it is because it is a battle. There's a battle fight element to leaning into your creativity. So I believe every human is creative, including accountants. That's one of our messages that you're an accountant, you are a human being, you are creative. You may not feel creative, you may think about creativity as art or painting or writing. That's not what we're talking about with creativity. We're talking about curiosity and problem solving, which accountants are excellent at, especially the ones that we work with are curious and open and want to be involved in their own marketing. And I'm going to link it with the rest pillar because choosing rest and choosing creativity is a balance and a they work together, all the pillars work together. But in order to be creative, you must choose rest. And yet there are times where you got to power through and, you know, work until late or work at the weekends. And some, I work hard to help my team not to have to do that. But from time to time, they do it because they care about the work or because of things that happen during the week. And we're conscious as a team that we have to work at, what does creativity even mean? How do I lean into my personal creativity? Am I encouraging the rest of the team to be creative in their, and bring their best self to this project? Are we just churning out work, or are we bringing our best creative self to every project we do? What happens when I'm not feeling creative? How do I deal with that? How do I bring rest into it? What if I need rest, but I also have a deadline? And so it is a fight to work for that. And we decided to keep it because we need these conversations. And in the team meet probably a month or two ago, we were sharing that some of us were overwhelmed, were burnt out, were exhausted, were struggling. I was sharing that that was happening to me personally and saying, I feel this, you guys, and I've maybe held back saying it because I'm trying to hold it all together and make everything work. But I just want to say, I'm in this with you. I don't have all the answers, but we're going to work it out together. And we came back to these two pillars of creativity and rest. And one of the team said, I'm going to be honest here, be transparent, which is one of our values. I'm not feeling very creative or restful right now. I feel like I'm not having the integrity of leaning into those. What do we do about that? So instead of going, oh no, we failed. We failed as a company. We're not leaning into these. Go, okay, we're not leaning into these right now. Where's that coming from? How can we help? What do we need to do as a team? Do we need to hire people? Do we not need to hire people, but organize better, be more productive and efficient? Do we need to check our numbers? Is there somewhere that we're over-servicing or undercharging? That conversation and other conversations as well has led to some significant changes already that are in place at PF because we recognized we're struggling with these pillars right now. And that's just as valid as we're doing great in these pillars. Oh. Like one of the team finished a show reel yesterday and I literally was texting her being like, I don't know if we swear on this podcast.
You can swear, that's okay. Fine.
I literally said, this is shit hot. Like, I don't have all the words for how great this is. This is so revealing. It's so beautiful. And, you know, when you see that level of creativity, and then she's also going, yeah, I do think it's good. And also I've spent so long on it, I can hardly see it anymore. How do we make this, you know, something that we can do for clients that's profitable? And how do I make sure I get rest? So it is a daily and a constant battle, but having it as a pillar for us reminds us to look at it and be intentional about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love the fact that you have rest as one of your pillars. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, that's something that I've struggled with over the last few months is giving myself enough time to rest. And my hours, even at the moment, I'll admit, are very upside down when they don't have to be. I tend to stay up sometimes 2-3 in the morning. And while I'm still getting my 7-8 hours sleep, mm-hmm. I know for a fact I'm not waking up as fresh as I would if I was sleeping at, say, 10 o'clock and getting up 8 hours later. And it's an internal battle that I'm facing at the moment. And I keep saying to myself, okay, this will be the last day. I'll go to sleep early, but it's very hard to get out of. I was speaking to one of my brothers about this, and they advised me, maybe just for one night, just sacrifice and sleep less hours mm-hmm. so that during the day you then feel tired mm-hmm. and then sleep mm-hmm. early the following mm-hmm. day. So
yeah,
I'm yet to try that, but that seems to be the best suggestion so far. So I think I'm going to give it a go.
Well, if you're anything like me and I'm an all or nothing. So instead of like just going, like easing it down, I would also be like, okay, instead of 3 a.m., 10 p.m. And one just of the things I'm working on is like, what if I went to 2:30, then to 2, then to 1:45? And I mean, I've been talking with my therapist about my all or nothing tendency, a strength and a challenge at many times. There's lots of things that are great about it, but I've realized this. What if I'm equally talented, good at what I do, running a great business, a good leader, and struggling with this, exhausted, maybe not choosing rest as much as I could be? What if both of those are true together? And what if this one doesn't negate that one? And that was a profound moment for me to say, what if both could be true? What if it's not either or? What if I'm not either a good leader or an exhausted person? What if both are true? And I'm striving for the healthy choices so that I'm not exhausted, so that I am choosing sleep and I'm choosing healthy eating and going for a walk every morning. If I go for a walk out in the woods every morning, my day is better. And I have had many days where I've chosen not to because my brain is just not even there, and it's a vicious cycle. So that's, I don't know that there's an answer there, but I do wonder if easing away from things is more realistic. And then rhythms and systems, Atomic Habits is one of my all-time personal business combo books. Like, the way it's changed my personal and business life is significant. And it's around these rhythms and these systems. And once we get into a rhythm, it's hard to change it, and it takes work.
Yeah, no, certainly. And as I said, it's something I need to work on for sure. But I feel I need to act sooner rather than later. Otherwise, I'll just get in this vicious cycle, which will become very difficult to get out of. So I may try your tactic, actually. Yeah. Just got all in, and just do a 10 p.m.
Yeah, try it for a week to go down just a little. Yeah. I have, to be fair, I've done that with jet lag, and I've got my experience with jet lag, and it does, because no matter what you do, sometimes you're awake at 3 a.m. and that staged approach did work for me with jet lag. So maybe just think about it as jet lag. That's all it is. You've got jet lag.
Yeah, that's actually a really good way of looking at it. I've never thought about it like that. Yeah. So yeah, interesting. Okay, I may have to try that, maybe today, actually.
Yeah,
thank you for that. I appreciate that advice.
Pleasure.
Now, we're actually working very well in tandem today, I must say, because you set me up perfectly for the next question. Because you mentioned you love going for walks, and that's what I wanted to ask you next. Yeah. And I hope you don't mind, I had a bit of a nosy in your Twitter account a few days ago.
Yeah.
And I noticed that you place your personal pillars in your bio, and they really stood out. And I found them intriguing. So if you wouldn't mind, I just wanted to touch on those a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So these pillars were Scotland, coffee, whiskey, faith, and walking. Now, I'll take Scotland out of this because we've already discussed
that. Yeah, actually, I need to update that. So thank you for pointing it out.
Oh, do you? Because okay.
Although Scotland is important to me, my five pillars that are on our website, and I think they're in my Instagram bio, but I maybe forgot to update my Twitter one. So the five are... in no particular order.
Yeah.
Coffee, whiskey, walking, faith, and magic. So magic. Very similar. Okay. But yeah, those are the five.
Yeah, very similar. Okay. Now, you just said they're in no particular order.
Yeah.
Because what I wanted to ask you was that they're very profound pillars, but I was just wondering, did you have a favorite out of those at all? Is there one that really stands out?
No, I think that's why I say no particular, partly because, you know, if you're like, does coffee go higher than faith or magic? Like, does it? I mean, I think all of us coffee drinkers can agree it does, but we're trying to be, you know, serious about it. But in all seriousness, you know, I start my day with a very big mug of strong black coffee. But the thing is, with pillars and these personal pillars, they don't necessarily stand alone. You don't choose coffee over faith or magic over walking. The way I describe it to the team, so every one of the PF team has identified their five personal pillars. So the way we describe it as, these are things that if you're on holiday or if you suddenly have a day off and you have some space and some rest, what things will you naturally do or put into your plans, or they will happen. They happen in your daily life too, and you strive for them. But I like the holiday example, because when I go to the Isle of Mull for a week or two, I will drink good coffee. I will drink good whiskey and I will go to the Tobermory Distillery and buy more whiskey. I will mull things over of faith and spirituality. I will look for magic. I believe Mull is a magical place. Magic in like a rainbow or sparkles of water drops or the sea or whatever, something that moves me. And I will go for long walks. Those things will happen without me even trying. So like some of our other team would have like gin pillar, chocolate pillar, yoga pillar, family pillar, things that are important. And anyone who knows us, we're like, oh yes, Karen, yes, she loves her whiskey and her coffee, and that is the kind of person she is. So I believe all of them are integrated. And when I'm on a walk, I'm looking for magic. And when I'm mulling things over of a spiritual nature, I'm drinking coffee. So they do integrate. And so therefore, I don't think I could pick one.
Sure. No, that's fair. I guess they will complement one another, right? In their own way. Now, recently I've been thinking personally myself about founders and entrepreneurs and people who set up companies and do really well. And I really admire people like that. So I'd be interested to kind of take it back, if you wouldn't mind, to the beginnings of PF, or just before PF started, when the seed was sown in your mind, if you like, about the idea. Do you remember what your initial steps were? So once you decided this is what you want to do, how did you start attacking this idea to try and make it a reality?
Yeah, it's a great question. And my seed came from, I am a qualified accountant myself. I'm a CPA in the States, and I keep that qualification alive. And I have worked, actually, interesting, I've never worked as an accountant. I've worked as an auditor. I've worked in an accountancy firm as an auditor and a business development manager and all this. But I have this connection with accountants and accounting, and I understand it. And I've got this creative side, so hence the two working together. And what struck me is I had been working with and serving accountants for a long time. I'd worked as an auditor, worked in this accountancy firm in Scotland, where I became their business development manager, and then they created a whole consultancy division, ran that for them. And then I worked for a company where I consulted with accountants on marketing and on other things. And the seed was that everyone kept giving accountants advice and direction, and you need to do this, and you need to do that, and you need to strategically do this, and you need a new website, maybe, or a new brand, or you need to consider email or social media or video. And they were getting all this advice from everyone. And then they would have to go away and find somebody to, create their brand, and then find another person to build their website and another company to help them with social. And it was all in pieces. And I thought, well, what if we helped them figure out what they need to do and then have somebody available to do it, to do the stuff exclusively for accountants? So really, my first step was to start reaching out to accountants who I knew and say, I'm starting this thing. We're going to help accountants in this practical way. Would this be something to be of help to you? And did the classic of, I mean, at least in my case, I thought I was being super, oh, what is the word? I'm not coming up with the word. It's like selective, choosy, I was going to say, but selective, because I only worked with accountants. And I'm like, look how unique this is. Look how exclusive we are. And yet, over the last 10 years, we've discovered it isn't only accountants. That is not the only requirement for working with PF. Now it's, are you an accountant who is focused on your humanity and bringing that out in your marketing? Are you willing to collaborate? Are you curious? Are you willing to try new things and see what works and let some things fail and let some things work? Are you willing to involve your team? Are you motivated and excited, at least by the idea of learning more about marketing? And do you recognize that that is your responsibility? It's not something you abdicate to a marketing agency. So our whole approach has stayed with accountants and yet changed massively. I would like PF to help every accountant in the whole world, That may only be by them absorbing our free stuff and learning a little piece of information. That may be the extent of how we help. But that doesn't mean they become a client. It's a very small group of accountants, of a certain kind of accountant, who finds us appealing and our marketing philosophy appealing. You know, and they may come and go, "Oh, I don't like that. I want quick wins. I want the right fast answer. I want to know for sure. I want guarantees." And we're like, "That's not how we do things. We have discovered for our approach that the right way is the long way, rather like making whiskey. You got to let it sit there in the cask for at least 3 years, usually 10 or 12 or 15 or 20. And that's when you really get the good stuff because you use the best quality." So back to the, you know, original days, the seed of the idea was to practically help accountants, and that is still true today. But we went through a lot of figuring that out by simply serving accountants with any marketing service until we worked out a system. So, I mean, it's hard actually. It's been a long time since I thought back. That was 10 years ago. And I was joking with one of the team about small Karen. You know, I wasn't necessarily a different size then, but, you know, the younger Karen sitting there in my flat at the time. I have a house now, but my flat with my MacBook and a big window there. And I distinctly remember doing everything, running the webinars, sending the emails, writing the blog posts, choosing the images, posting the blog posts, sharing those on social, everything, all the client work, all the lead. We used a few outsourcers and freelancers. I remember running a webinar and the postie was showing up at the window, chapping it to give me a delivery. And I'm like, "I'm on a webinar," you know, and you're trying to do all the things. And that's what I did. I just did all the things. And honestly, I've heard a lot of people say this, which doesn't make it any less true for me, but I didn't actually set out to have this creative agency with 18 or 25 or 100 people. I just wanted to help accountants to the best of my ability with a few freelancers. I didn't even know if I wanted employees. But then I finally got to the stage of, gosh, all this money we're paying the freelancers and outsourcers, I could have two full-time people who are all in. And since then, we've learned the power of the collaborative working of currently 18 people who are all of them, content writers, the graphic designers, the web developers, the strategists, everyone is fully focused on delivering the best work for every client together. That is powerful, and we do better work together.
Awesome. Awesome. And honestly, congratulations again for, you know, what you've built. I mean, to have that many employees, it just goes to show that you've built solid foundations from which to build. And your team clearly love working there as well. And it's really nice to hear it from you as a founder, to hear the story of how it all started. So I appreciate you sharing that. Now, also throughout our conversation, to me it seems that you're someone who's very deep. You think deeply about things. You don't rush decisions. You, as I said, think very deeply about the things that you want to do. And connected to that is something that we spoke on email about. And I'm going to read these words to you, and you'll probably know what these words are. Is good, does good, always. Do you want to share with us what these words mean to you and where are these words placed? I know
Yeah,
where they're
so
placed, but I want you to
I was gonna say this is a
tell
tattoo on my right arm, and
Indeed.
it's got the Deathly Hallows sign from the Harry Potter world, for those who are familiar with that. There's a whole lot behind that, and then it's got the word always, which it means something to Harry Potter fans. But this concept of is good, does good, I mulled it over a lot because there's a Bible verse that says that God is good and does good always, and that sort of struck me. There's the concept in my mind, and actually this struck me after I got the tattoo, that life is good and does good to you always. That doesn't mean that everything will always be happy. It doesn't mean everything will always work out, but there's a good element that's there always. And I love the concept of always. of eternity, of things that are forever. As a side note, I was talking to somebody about people who say like a forever home or a forever family or a forever job or company. I'm like, I feel a little resistance to that because I believe in this down here earth and another life after. Those are different. This is not forever, that is. But the concept of good thing, the good endures forever. When you believe that and hold on to that, there's a lot that, and that comes back to the faith element, that can see you through, that even when it's darkest and toughest and there's grief and there's heaviness and there's wrestlings and there's wonderings and is it even good, that when you believe that there is good, even in a kernel or seed format, that does help you see through some dark things, and certainly has for me. And I feel passionately whenever I get a tattoo that it has meaning to remind me. That's partly why I put it right there every day. You know, it's there. And even, you know, even to extend it beyond to as an aspirational statement that I am good and do good always. And that one, whew, I had to dig into some heavy duty self-worth things there to be like, how can I hold on to that? Again, back to my, is that true? Along with also, I screw up, I mess things up, I don't always get it right, or I don't even know. And still that there is good and that I am doing good. So.
No, that's really interesting. And it also comes across by speaking to you that affirmations are quite important to you as well. Mm-hmm. And you like the idea of having affirmations around all of the time.
Yeah.
Just to help ground oneself and to give oneself a direction. And I noticed that's very much present with PF as well. And I'm just having a look at your website again as we're speaking. And this is something I noticed a few weeks ago as well when we first connected. It's about placing values at the heart of everything. For example, I'm looking at the section now about people, and it's clear to see in the background our people, you celebrate the team, and you're very proud about the values that you hold dear to your culture and work ethic. How important do you think it is to be proud of these values and shout about it and tell people this is what we stand for? Because often and certainly for myself as well, I feel maybe I don't do that enough personally. I've very much been a person who keeps things inside a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've maybe struggled to create that balance where I'm not as confident as to kind of voice myself as maybe as much as I should, perhaps.
Yeah.
So have you found that with PF?
Yeah, it's a great observation about how much do I shout about, what do I say, what do I proclaim? And actually, many of the accountants that we work with, and any of them who are listening will resonate, I'm confident with what you said, because accountants particularly can struggle with how do I say what we do well without boasting, without being arrogant, without being that person. We talk about this with follow-up in sales. How do I follow up a prospect without being pushy? How do I show them I want to work with them without looking desperate? And a couple of the pieces of advice that we give them, we run a 12-week coaching group and we help them work through these things. And this comes up a lot. And what I would say about values is values are, if there's anything that you can work on as a business owner, whether you're an accountant or any business owner, it's values. First, because you need to understand what they are. And I don't mean just a word like integrity or service or excellence. What do you mean by that? Mm. It's very tempting to say, oh, our values are friendly, modern, excellence. You know, what do you mean by friendly? What does friendly mean to you? How is your friendliness different from somebody else's friendliness? And when our clients define those and we say, well, what do you mean by friendly? The words that they use change the game a little. And this person's friendly maybe means kind. And this person's friendly means banter. Well, that's a big difference. Like, do you want to work with somebody who's kind and has banter, or the, you know, which one's important to you? And why and where does it come from? And how does that reveal itself? So then the second thing we say is once you know what these values are, and you have a word or a phrase and you've defined it, because you and you alone get to define what you mean by your values. So for example, we have a value called transparency, which we have defined as sharing the right things at the right time to build relationship. So that does not mean that you just blurt out anything you think anytime. That's not transparency. You need to pause and think and consider the relationship and say, considering our relationship, and actually today's not a good day to share that. I will share it. Tomorrow's better so that we can have this good relationship. So you have to know what they are. You have to know how you define them. And then you have to show them. I almost don't care so much if you tell them, although I do believe you need to, as long as you show them. And that's what we encourage our clients. So we say, show, don't tell. Not again that you don't tell, but prioritize showing over telling. So if you want to say, for example, this happens to a lot of our clients, they're like, well, we're a modern, forward-thinking, tech-focused accountancy firm. You don't need to say that. You need to show modern things. You need to show tech. You need to talk about the latest tech and apps that you use, and then people will figure it out. But if you have to say, we're different because, are you? Or are you being a little potentially defensive and saying, yeah, we're different because we're friendly, modern, forward-thinking, and use tech? And I'm going, I can list for you 150 accountancy firms that are all of those things. Who are you in your values? And the beautiful thing about values is once you dig deep on them, you begin to discover how they are different and how you yourself as the business owner and your team are actually unique, because everybody is, but a lot of people haven't dug in and done the hard work to figure it out themselves so that they can then figure out how they can show it by way of video, blog post, content, social media, website, brand. All of these things can reveal that. And we trust that people can glance at PF and see creativity and over time see integrity and feel generosity and even feel some measure of rest. There is an element they feel straight away, and there's an element they feel over time, because it takes time to see patterns in values.
No, very thought-provoking. And, you know, I absolutely love your passion when it comes to marketing. And it comes across, it shines through. And it's really nice to hear the different perspective on marketing. So no, thank you for sharing that. Now, in a moment, I'll remind everyone about how they can follow you, yourself and PF on social media. But before I do that, I just wanted to ask if I haven't asked any questions that you maybe wanted to respond to, or if there's anything you wanted to mention that you haven't done so far, please feel free to do so. And then, as I said, after that, then I can remind everyone of how to get in touch and follow your work.
Yeah, I mean, I've appreciated the questions, because I often feel that's, I enjoy the interview style and the bouncing off of who people are and where people are. You know, I do a good bit of presenting, and sometimes that can be challenging because there's not so much to react towards, and you've got this statement to make. The one thing that popped into my head when you said that was just to mention that we are always hiring at PF. And I mentioned that because it's a lesson that we've learned over the years, is we've gone through spells of, hey, we're hiring now, these are the roles. And that can bring its own challenges of, yay, we've hired all the, oh, okay, we have a lot of people, we have a lot of work, let's focus on this. And then people get swamped and overwhelmed, and then we hire more. And then we go, do we need to hire more? Do we need to get more efficient? How can we address that? So we want to be moving more into a place where we have a continual process of hiring. Now, that could mean that somebody could apply, and even if they were successful all the way through our 7-stage hiring process, not be offered a job until next year. But we're starting to consider, wouldn't that be better to find people who say, I don't just want a job. I don't just want a place, a nice place to work and do these things. I want PF. I want PF for these reasons, for creativity, integrity, generosity, and rest, for transparency, for the people that they are and the work they do and the opportunity I have and the career progression. That's what I want. And I am willing to wait for it. And we believe that for team members as well as for clients, certainly any accountant who's listening, more than welcome to peruse all the free stuff and explore and learn. And there's ways to get in touch with us there. But I think it is important to mention that we're always hiring because it's a long process. As I said, it's a seven-stage process that we've created that works. Doesn't work perfectly, no system does, but it works pretty damn well. And the people that we find are the people who come to the conclusion that even if they have to wait, this is their place. And I think that's worth mentioning because we are coming towards the end of a hiring spell. We're not finished, but we are at this place. But I've just recently had an interview with somebody who I said, we're continuing to move you through this process because we don't draw the line there. And we believe those people are out there and they're worth waiting for. And for them, PF is worth waiting for too.
That's a very unique approach, actually. I don't think I've ever heard that before. And yeah, it's a very different way of looking at it. And certainly, I'm sure has its benefits.
Well,
So yeah, really interesting.
it's the oversubscribed concept. I don't know if you've read
Sure.
that by Daniel Priestley, which
I haven't,
says
no.
it's one of the top business books. I have a list.
Okay.
Atomic Habits is on there, Story Brand by Donald Miller, Rising Strong by Brené Brown, although not written as a business book. I would definitely put it in there. They Ask You Answer, Marcus Sheridan. But this concept of oversubscribed and having waiting lists, people like to be in a good thing. And as long as there's communication and expectation, it's like the bar that goes when you're waiting for an update on your phone and the little bar is going, if you didn't have the bar, you'd be like, what is going on? Is anything happening? But because the bar says this will be done in 20 minutes or 2 hours, you're like, okay, I'll just leave it there and I'll go away and do other things and I'll come back. Because I know that things are happening and it's worth waiting for. And it, oversubscribe uses a concept of like concert tickets or, something that a book coming out that you're willing to wait for because it's good. And I believe that applies to hiring. And I believe that the more that we as businesses can not sacrifice our emotional energy, our mental energy, our financial situation, working with clients and team that aren't a fit, but instead waiting for the best, letting the best find them and going through a process and being clear about a client acceptance process and a team acceptance process and being realistic about the fact that there will be times when you, no matter what you do, it doesn't work out. That's okay, as long as you've done everything you can do and been transparent throughout. But in my opinion, it's a better way because, as you've mentioned, our philosophy for clients and for any business, professional service businesses is better, not more. It's not about getting this massive, like, pile of leads and presuming that if you have 400, the whole funnel concept, and if you have 400 and then that turns into 100 shortlisted, which turns into 50 really good potential clients and 30 that sign proposals and 20 that move forward or whatever. What if you just had 30 really good ones as opposed to 400 that you had to filter through? Well, that's your job and your responsibility to be clear and say, this is who we work with and here's who we don't. This is who we hire and here's who we don't. And we say that all over and we stand by it. We hire and fire by values. And that applies to clients and team. Like, we live those and it matters. We have check-in documents and forms that say, how have you leaned into this value and this pillar? How have you not? Where do you need to work at that? If we have a client relationship that's struggling for some reason, we have a conversation with them about these things. and we lean into those. So I think it does apply not only to team members, but to clients, and say, I would rather have a client who really loves us, really wants to work with us, and is willing to wait for 3 months. We'll do everything we can to help them during that waiting period. We're not going to leave them stranded. We're going to give them the bar, the progression bar. We're going to give them homework to do, or free resources, or things that can help them be ready from the moment they start. But this concept of just waiting for people to find you, going for feast or famine, being at the mercy of what they think they want to do, rather than you being in charge and in control of your marketing and your business and your team, that's exhausting. It's an exhausting way to do business. So rather than this wild roller coaster, let's even it out. Let's figure out who we want. Let's be honest about that and be transparent. And if the person says, listen, love the company, love all this, made it all the way through the high, I don't want to wait, it's no problem. It's no problem. Better to call it. And then we can all be honest with each other about it. And it's back to that, like, I want the best for people. I want the best for our clients. And I will do everything possible for my company to make sure that we deliver that. But if we've done all that and they've done all that, and for whatever reason, it's not the best place, that's okay. And other times we realize, hey, we screwed up here. We'll raise our hands, we'll fix it. Or you did something there and you'll take responsibility. So, yeah, being honest with what you want and how you do it is a lot more relieving and a lot more leans us back towards rest, which we were talking about. And there's a lot more I could say about rest, making some notes on. I'd like to write a book on that concept of using rest towards creativity. It's a choice, and it's not just sleep. It's not just, it may not even be sleep for you. There's a mental, spiritual, emotional thing of rest. But to be a rested business owner means that you're somebody who is working with the best people, best clients, and the best team for the best money that you need to charge. That helps you to be a person at rest, which brings your creative and best self.
Wow, what a way to end. And by the way, if you do end up writing that book, please let me know.
Well, I've got a
I'll be one of the
manuscript of
first
book
people to
one.
buy it. Oh, have you?
That is book three. So I've got the manuscript of book one that is in editing phase, and I'm not gonna lie, is a tough phase right now. I'm struggling. My struggle is that I have more words, so I have 130,000 words, and my editors have advised to move this down to 100,000, which I'm finding hard. So that is in progress. That is coming. The manuscript is there. Just shorten it a little bit. Then there's another book on the accountants are creative too. And then we go to rest. So in that order, you can expect them, and I'll keep you posted.
Absolutely. Please let me know if that ever becomes available. I'll certainly try and get a copy for myself.
For sure.
Karen, it's been an absolute pleasure. From the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been an incredible conversation. Thanks for taking the time and sharing everything that you did. Just a quick reminder to everybody who's watching and listening, Karen Rayburn is available on Twitter. You can follow her using her handle on Twitter, which is at Karen L. Rayburn, spelt KarenL. Reyburn. That's her Twitter handle. And of course, you can follow the fabulous work of PF. They are also available on Twitter using their handle at wear_PF on Twitter, and their website, of course, which is wearpf.com. Please do go check out their work. And as I said, you can follow Karen on Twitter as well. Thank you so much for watching and listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Sabir Bharti Show. Take care. Until next time, have a blessed day. Bye-bye.